We're just normal men.
What do you mean, normal men?
We're just innocent men.
Welcome to the Red Ass Podcast, your home for Aggie sports, barbecue, music, and much more. And now your hosts, Rob White and Roy May.
Howdy, guys. Welcome back to the Red Ass Podcast. And Houston, we have no problems. I am Rob White, fighting Texas Aggie class of 2014.
I'm Roy May, fighting Texas Aggie class 2015. I don't have a ring on.
Dropping off the glasses. I had them on just to kick it off. We were feeling good. We're doing bye week deal. I pretty much wore the same outfit last bye week. Figured we'd keep the same energy going here this week. We made it. And A&M is still 8-0.
Still 8-0. It goes back to a few weeks ago with, you know, Coach Elko saying, you know, kicking down the door and winning at night in Baton Rouge. That's kicking down a door, and not just winning, but throttling an LSU team, like just absolutely throttling them. And that's not with playing our best ball for four quarters either. First quarter was great. Second quarter was terrible. And that third quarter is the best quarter we played all year long. All of a sudden, the offense and the defense, we've been hammering on this, the offense and the defense put it together and just rattled off points.
Rory McIlroy was it McIlroy? No, it wasn't Rory.
Greg McIlroy. Yeah. Rory McIlroy probably wasn't watching the game.
He wasn't worried about any of that. Greg McIlroy did make a really interesting comment. He said, you know, a lot of people are not going to be talking about this result strictly because of what came in the aftermath with Brian Kelly being fired, which we will get into in a minute. But as it stands right now, this was by far and away one of the more complete A&M games played, and they had one of their worst quarters in the second quarter. Yeah. You know, that's impressive to me. And I think that is such a great indication of the direction A&M's moving, because you still don't have the perfect game yet. And you dropped almost 50 points at night in Baton Rouge, completely cleared out the building, completely took over that building in every sense of the word, the fashion. I mean, the entire second half of this game, especially the fourth quarter. I mean, this was just a billboard for A&M. Hey, this is amazing. You should go play here, because they will come into your place and do this thing.
Well, yeah, and there were some pretty high profile recruits in the game as well.
Huge, one
with Lamar Brown, yeah, big time. And you know, we talk about the second half adjustments, which is just continues to be a thing. And coming off that second quarter, obviously, I mean, we're down in the game going to the half, you know. And especially at, you know, in Tiger Stadium, man, letting that crowd get back into the game is a dangerous thing. And we came out in the third quarter like we were playing in a high school stadium. Like, we didn't care. It didn't matter what the fans were doing. It didn't matter. It didn't matter the opponent across from us. Didn't matter that it was night. Didn't matter that it was in Death Valley. They just came out and from top to bottom executed on both sides of the ball and showed everybody what we're completely capable of. And that kind of like getting out of the gate for the second half, that is just demoralizing for a team. And to talk about how, you know, A&M took over the stadium, but, you know, by the end of the game, it was, I mean, damn near empty. That's the kind of thing that doesn't really happen in Baton Rouge a whole lot. Now they will leave if you're losing. I mean, it doesn't have to be nighttime for them to do that, because they got drinking to do anyways. They don't really care. But that almost felt like the nail in the coffin for Brian Kelly, because that's just straight up embarrassing them.
It was an absolute embarrassment for LSU football. And if we know anything about LSU football, they are a very prideful group of people over there. And for good reason. I mean, you're talking about one of the top programs in college football. Nobody's going to deny that. They've consistently shown that over multiple coaches, they can win national titles. This is one of those places that is kind of a staple of college football. And of course, you know, all of the air about how incredibly dangerous this place is to play at night, even under Brian Kelly, it was. I mean, he finishes his career 20-2 there at night. I mean, that's impressive. That's a really, really good win percentage. And that is all credit, not just to the product on the field, but to the fans in that stadium. Give them their credit for their time. That has changed.
Well, you also have to turn it around though and realize that now he's 5-11 against ranked teams in Tiger
Yeah.
Stadium.
And that's a
And
big deal too.
that's not going to do it.
No.
That's not going to do it for an LSU fan base. So this coaching carousel this year is absolutely bonkers. It's crazy how many coaches have been fired and how many are probably on the chopping block here pretty soon. And you look at it and go, where's everybody going to go? Because these
Somebody.
guys aren't going to stop coaching.
No, I think the thing I thought was really fascinating, they brought up this number, which is there's almost $250 million going to be out there in terms of buyout money. This is dead money for all of the different coaches that are just getting paid not to coach, across the college football landscape, especially at these Power Five schools. I don't mean Power Four schools, but you see how, the landscape has completely changed. The mindset has completely changed. And if you're not able to stay relevant in terms of the playoff picture, it becomes really quick. I mean, it's a quick trigger, and we've seen it across the land.
Well, and the amount will be more than that because that's not factoring in all the assistants.
Exactly.
You never know how many assistants and coordinators are going to get canned as well. So that's not just, I mean, that number is just the coaches. The money in this sport is ridiculous.
It is.
It's just got completely ridiculous. And head coaching contracts are insane. I love how Elko's is like incentive based. I'm a big fan of that. I said that before. I think every professional sport should have a base contract for every single position, and everything else from there is incentive based. Like if you want to make a ton of money, go be really good.
Yeah, I mean that seems to be a really good way to go about it. And unfortunately, A&M, once again being trendsetters here, or people are starting to try to follow this model a little bit.
Well, it makes a ton more sense. There was a thread on the board. The dude was talking about like he's big into contracts and all this stuff, just talking about, what he would offer Jimbo, and it wasn't like 100% done, but he had some ideas. And just talking about, with the guaranteed money being a big thing because of buyouts, incentive base, and there are triggers that trigger both, like your salary raises, not just bonuses, but the next year your salary will raise if this certain achievement is if you achieve this certain parameter. And I thought it was fascinating to look at it because you can. We all know that right now the going rate for a head football coach, Power Four, big time programs is, what, 7 to 10 million, right? Seven to ten
Around
million
that, yeah.
somewhere in that area. And if you're at, like 8.5, but you have incentives for making the playoffs, making it to Atlanta, winning the SEC, getting past, winning playoff games, winning the national championship, all of a sudden these escalators in your contract, you can make a ton of money. And you can, possibly raise your salary for the following year. So it's gonna be interesting to see. Especially this go around because of how many big time programs, like as far as they have money, like big time programs that have openings, it's going to be interesting to see how these contracts are laid out. Now, obviously, you're not always going to find out all the details depending on the state. They don't have to say anything, but normally, most of the details come out on the on the contracts. That's going to be, to me, probably the interesting part is the financial side to see. Are these schools going to just try and keep going with the model of, I'm going to give you 7 years, I'm going to give you $11 million a year,
Right.
guaranteed? I mean, are you going to do that? Are you going to hitch yourself to that buyout? Because remember, you're in the middle of a buyout right now. Generally,
Right.
you can't coach, you got 30 days to get him paid. And it's been interesting to hear rumblings out of LSU about they're trying to, like a moral clause or something, trying to owe him less than what he's owed, and that's going to turn into a big fat mess. I mean, a lot of stuff is coming out about Brian Kelly, but being an asshole isn't reason to, like, you'll violate your contract if you're a jerk.
No, you don't. And that's very different from the way A&M kind of went about their buyout, right? I mean, we just went ahead and signed the check, which, which at the end of the day, that's what you had to do with Jimbo Fisher. I mean, you gave him this absolute albatross of a contract. At the end of the day, he wasn't doing what you expected him to do. He comes off of a losing season, comes into the next season, and really doesn't show any signs of improvement. You
No
got there.
development at the player level, no
Nope.
improvement from team level. It
No,
was
no culture improvement. It
same,
was just
yeah, same shit, different day.
right. So you go ahead, pull the trigger, sign the check. Everybody looks at you like you're insane.
Yeah.
And then when you do sign that check, everybody starts coming around saying, well, you should just be happy that there's a guy like Mark Stoops who's willing to come into your program and do it. And what does A&M do? especially amongst the fandom. I mean, we're not talking administration. We're talking us. What did we
Yeah.
do? You saw
Kids
what happened that
melted
night.
down.
Yeah, we saw what
Damian.
happened on Twitter that night. Everybody, and I mean literally the entire fan base was like, absolutely not. So the deal gets pulled. Elko gets hired, which was the natural pick for most people, even if he wasn't the flashiest hire. And I knew that there were going to be some question marks with him coming into, coming into College Station. Can he elevate what he is doing at Duke and apply it here? So far, the answer is a resounding yes. He has done a great job on that front. Nobody's going to deny that. I said coming into this week and even earlier in the season, what game did I have circled on the calendar? Like, this is going to tell me a lot about Elko and his future in College Station. Was going to be this game in Baton Rouge. This is his first shot to finally pop one of the bigger bubbles that has been kind of hanging over A&M, which is you can't win in Death Valley at night since you've been in the league. You lose every single one of those games. You lose in 13, you lose 16, 17, 19, 21, 23. You lose six in a row. You come out and you take care of your business. And it didn't look pretty at the beginning.
Well,
We
you win six in a row, or you lose six in a row on the road, and you also lost home games in there too.
Indeed. I mean, from 2012 through 2016 at home, you didn't win those games. It was a tough sledding stretch for A&M football when it came to LSU. And a lot of that came down to physicality. A lot of that came down to culture. A lot of that came down to coaching. We just struggled against LSU during that stretch. We have made those adjustments. We've made the right hires. We went and even picked up one of their guys in Tommy Moffitt, who we have talked about on this podcast before. I have been so thrilled with what he's been able to bring to the table. And there's probably not a happier member of the staff than Tommy Moffitt walking around on that field after the game, seeing that stadium.
Oh, absolutely. A total redemption game for him. And considering he's a strength and conditioning guy, you know that he's a fiery dude. We've seen it. And so you know he was just loving every single minute of that. But you go back and you talk about, and it's not just LSU, right? But LSU was a really good indicator that we were the have-nots in the SEC. We were in the SEC. We weren't the bottom rung on the ladder, but we were just kind of floating around in the middle. And it was, what was the narrative every year? We got to start beating the Mississippi schools if we want to start contending. And we weren't really beating the Mississippi schools, so we couldn't stand up to teams like LSU and Alabama and Georgia. Maybe give them a run for their money. Obviously a freakish win with Johnny with Bama, but I mean, think about, what happened the next year, and it's just. We were just kind of meddling around in the SEC and with no kind of clear future or path in sight. And that's one of the reasons why Jimbo got canned. Like you said, it was a year to year, all of a sudden the exact same stuff is happening. And we haven't seen anything out of the program to tell us anything different. Great, he recruited really well. Well, it doesn't matter who you recruit if you don't develop. It doesn't matter, like, he was intentionally like watching the recruiting numbers because he wanted to set a record, and we know for a fact that that's just not how you can not how you recruit if you want to build a program, and you have to establish the culture. And Marshall Reed said this in an interview with on Kirk Herbstreit's podcast. He's talking about, if you're young and if you're a freshman, he's like, I was a freshman, and I didn't know who was coming in. I found out it was Elko, found out it was Colin Klein, and you have to build a culture that makes these kids want to like develop and grow and understand that that takes time. They all want to develop and grow, but they all want to do it right now. If they're not playing by the end of their freshman year, they're out of here. And so he's developing, not only just, he's developing the players in the system, and and every his like he bringing in his system into this, so it's his culture, it's his program, and you're seeing those results on the field. And we saw him a little bit last year, but again, fade down the back end. But this year, it's a combination of you got another year of buy-in. We went out and recruited players that we needed. Like, we recruited players at positions of need: Craver, Concepcion, the tight ends. We needed these key players in these key positions in order to do what Colin Klein wanted to do. And so we didn't just go out and get the highest rated dudes in the portal. We were like, we need this, and we need this, and we need this. Then we went out and we filled those holes. And I love the whole Craver and Concepcion story. Like, it wasn't even a watch tape thing. He went to the DB room and he was like, who are the guys that were hardest for you to cover last year? And they said Concepcion and Craver. And he's like, all right, we're going to go get these guys.
We want them,
And
And
it's just. he makes the right moves for the program. It's and we saw it with Jimbo, that recruiting class. That's narcissistic to want to set a record when you know you're not addressing the needs of your program at the time, and then to just not have any not to have any carryover. And yeah, I'll hire an offensive coordinator, but then was Petrino really calling plays? I mean, let's be completely honest.
Yeah, I mean, based on what we've seen out of his Arkansas teams in terms of a lot of the offensive play call, I mean, maybe not necessarily what we saw against Auburn, but you know that you didn't really see a lot of his offensive input while Jimbo was here. Looking at some things that I really appreciate, and we talk about patience, seeing guys like Jamarian Morrow, right, who has been sitting back in the depth chart a little bit. I mean, dude averaged 8.5 yards a carry. He only had 3 carries in the game, but scores a touchdown. Is very contributing in the game where he needed to be. Same deal with Reuben Owens. Hell, Amari Daniels had a couple of really good runs in the game. I mean, you saw a lot of these guys have had a chance to buy their time and start working their way into it. And the guy we've been talking about from the very beginning, Bethel Roman. I mean, he has an incredible catch. I really would have loved to have seen him get a lot more options in the field over the course of the game, but you saw a really good balance of runners and receivers all getting different looks in the field that all contributed to this game and how we ended up winning it. And that's the thing I find especially intriguing going forward because all of a sudden, if you're Missouri, if you're South Carolina, Texas, the last three SEC games, and of course Stanford, but you look at those guys, they're looking at this lineup like, who do you cover? Who do you try to defend? Because you have all of these different, incredibly powerful playmakers on the field at the same time. It's tough. You're going to end up having a seam that's going to be uncovered.
Well, I mean, we've talked about the depth ad nauseum, but you look at the running back room, you look at the wide receiver room, and where your playmakers are, and even the tight end room, and you have this depth, and you have these guys that are just like they're biding their time, and you hope that in the back of their mind they're not thinking about bouncing after the season, hitting the portal, and you'll have some guys do it. It's going to happen to every team every year
Every
until
year.
unless they get rid of the portal, but. You see guys playing for each other and they take the role, whatever role they're given. EJ Smith is a perfect example. I thought he'd be a lot bigger part of the game because I thought he'd earned it. But he had some snaps in the game and he had an incredibly important blitz pickup on a drive that we were able to convert, can keep moving the ball down the field. And they're all doing what they're asked of, right? If I'm gonna ask you to carry the ball 3 times tonight, but those 3 times that running back carries it, he's going to try and kill someone, right?
Yes.
Hey, Bethel Roman. Man, you're probably only gonna get like 12 snaps tonight, but we're gonna try and come your way. And the problem is, you only got one football, but you have all these playmakers. But because they have this, and this goes back to the culture of the program, and because they have this togetherness in the program and willing to play for each other, it's when your number is called, you got to execute. You got to do the absolute best that you can do within your ability when your number is called. And if we call you 5 times or we call you 25 times, and everybody seems to be stepping up and doing it, and even when it's I need you to block, right? You're not getting the football tonight, but I need you to block. It's just playing as a complete team and playing for each other. And that's the attitude that Elko has brought in. I think, we can look back and say it was a selfish program when Jimbo was here. And this is a team effort. It's a team culture. And man, they look like they're having so much fun. I mean, I would be too if I
Yeah.
was undefeated, but even then, the supporting cast guys, attentive, not just kind of staring off into the void on the sideline, paying attention to the games, rooting on their teammates. So it's been fun to watch that dynamic on the sideline change. And then you look at that game is a perfect example where you could mirror it back to, the Jimbo era, but you look at Mike Elko and then you look at Brian Kelly and you look at the interaction with players and just how he acts on the sideline, and it's night and day. And I think, it's one of those things, we always said in the Army, if you have a leader that yells at you all the time, eventually you just tune him out. And if you have
Right.
a leader that never yells at you run all over him.
Right.
So Elko is able to balance that kind of, good cop, bad cop to an extent. It sounds like he has a great relationship with every single player. They all love the guy, but they also know that he has expectations for him and he's not going to let him slide. But he's
Right.
not just. But like Jimbo and Brian Kelly are, perfect examples of At some point, you're yelling too much, and you can't yell and be a jerk and expect these people to play for you.
He's not a manager, he's a leader.
Yeah.
He goes out there and he leads by example. He's going to go out there and he's going to say the things that need to be said, but the players understand why they're being said and they make those adjustments and they get better. And they do get better as the game goes. I mean, we saw it in the Notre Dame game early, right? You know, he's getting up in the lineman's face and being like, "Well, yeah, I don't know what the exact words that are said, but whatever needed to be said was said, and they came out and they played a lot better on that net, you know, those next several drives." It's those little knit, you know, those little things that have to get adjusted for in a game. And
Well, you didn't see him go back. You didn't see him go back to the offensive line and yell at him a whole bunch more. It was,
no.
it needs to be fixed. I don't want to see it again. And they were like, "You're right. It needs to be fixed. You got
Right.
it."
You know, looking back just at this game, something to keep in mind that once again, turnovers in this game. I mean, we didn't force a single turnover in this game. You still won by the amount that you did. You just went out there and did your job when you had to and created those stops, created those opportunities, especially in the second half. It was beautiful to see.
Well, talking about those turnovers, one of them, that the interception in the back of the end zone, just absolutely terrible read. I mean, Marcellus owned up to it, but
Yes, he
that
did.
just terrible, terrible read. The other interception is one of those that just happens, man. It's not really quarterback's
Deflection.
fault. Gets tipped. When passes are getting tipped at the line, it's almost more the fault of the offensive lineman than it is the quarterback, because the offensive lineman's job is to keep the dude's hands down. But it gets tipped. They make a good catch. So that one I'll give up. Special teams have a punt block for a safety, but then to turn around in the second half, have that Concepcion return, have special teams locked back in. We got to
I
do
mean,
something about our punt coverage.
well, yeah, we got to work on that. I think the thing that I really liked about the second half, and it's not a play that it'll get talked a lot about, was the opening return. Opening return, you know, I mean, that right there was a trendsetter for the rest of the second half. You don't break away and get the big touchdown run, but you get incredibly good field position, which then sets up your offense to go out there and do what they do. You get the key stop. And then special teams comes to the rescue once again with Casey Concepcion looking like absolute unit out there, running all over this, you know, running all over this coverage. And at that moment, you know, you're back up two scores. You've essentially taken all of the energy that was left in that stadium out,
You get another stop,
and you get another stop. And at
and then
that
you score
point,
again.
yeah, and then you scored again. So, I mean, that's the type of response that you expect. We always talk about, you know, one of the most important time frames in a game is like that first 5 to, you know, about that first 5 minutes in the third quarter, because that will really end up setting a trend for how the rest of that game might look. You saw it happen against LSU this week, and you've seen it happen in several other games too. But I love the fact that we took full advantage out the gate with our adjustments, did our job.
It's not just the return. It's the good return and capitalizing on that good return, right? It's marching
Yes.
down the field and you're setting the pace for the halftime with your first drive, and then you're like, whether it's offense or defense, really, it's the first two drives that'll almost always show you what the second half is going to look like, because you go out there, get the ball, you score, you get out and you stop them. We scored 35 unanswered points, man. That last touchdown was against backups. I mean, that was a 49-18 game.
And scarily enough, it probably should have been worse. Yeah, you know, if you don't throw away that interception in the end zone, if
You
you,
don't, yeah, you don't throw that pick. We're probably in the 50s.
and talking about, you know, if we talk about first half mistakes, things that obviously came, yeah, we had the two picks, one in the red zone, which was a big deal. You have the third and 18 stop that ends up getting nullified thanks to a after the play personal foul, which ends up leading to a score. That is a problem that did get fixed in the second half because you didn't see it happen again. And that's the type of thing that you have to see over the course of the game is like, yeah, you get irritated at that call. You get irritated at the little nitpicky mistakes that allowed LSU to think they were in this game going into halftime. You know, you give them a lead right before the half, and we're lucky that it wasn't more because after that pick, you end up forcing the field goal.
Yeah.
But you come out there and you make your adjustments. You win the second half. You don't have as many mistakes. You go out there and do your job. You don't create those penalty situations. You just beat them straight up. You didn't even need turnovers to do it. You just go out there
Yeah.
and beat their ass.
It's just amazing. You look at it, and on that drive where he throws the pick, even if that's 3 points. So now we're at 52. If we
Potentially
don't,
55 points,
if they don't
56
extend
points.
that, if they don't extend that drive, that's 7 points off their board. I mean, it's crazy to think that as much as we scored, we could have scored more, right?
It was a stomp in every sense of the word. And now you've done your job at this point. We said, get through to the bye week. This is a critical bye week, and you've hit it.
And man, what a crap slate of games. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, we're going to get
It's
into
the
that in
one
a minute.
weekend I don't have to be stressed. Like, there's nothing to watch.
No, there's like one decent hate watch, and the rest of it's just going to be intrigue, but at best, and just a background noise at worst.
For me, it's just now A&M has shown that they can win big games, right? And I get that LSU's, not the
Not
team that we thought they were. Some people had them like ranked, number one preseason.
Lee
People don't.
Corso had him as his national title pick.
Yeah, so it's just they're obviously not the team we thought we were, but this happens every year in college football. People fall completely out of the rankings, and then people come out of nowhere and get ranked. But this is a team that they've shown they can win big, right? They've shown they can win games that they don't normally win, and now you're starting to look at which game is pivotal moving forward, right? Out of the three conference games we have left, I think you can just take South Carolina and chalk it up. I do. They don't look good. I can't imagine losing South Carolina at home. Missouri doesn't quite look like what we thought they were going to be before the season, right? They're still not a bad team. Well, Eli Drinkwitz's a good coach, but all of a sudden this game, even though it's on the road, we get a 2:30 kick. I love 2:30 kicks on the road.
Perfect.
You're not having to play the early one, but you're not letting them get all liquored up and have the night game experience kind of thing. So I love the 2:30 slot for the Missouri game. And then Samford's a year gimme. But then, the Texas game, what happens to Texas this weekend? They got Vandy. Vandy's coming to town. And if Vandy is who everybody thinks they are, like, they should walk out of Austin with a win. Now all of a sudden, Texas doesn't look as daunting.
Well, and looking at the backstretch of this schedule, I mean, it's crazy to consider, we have a realistic shot of winning these last four games.
Absolutely.
And had you said this at the beginning of the year, like what were we talking about at the beginning of the season? We were looking at this schedule and looking at how potentially daunting it was going to be. I mean, I sat here and told everybody at the gate, I said, this is Texas 8-4 again. A&M gonna rock and roll and do their thing. But you're still going to lose some games you weren't supposed to lose to, because that's it. But that was my expectation of this team. You've had moments. You look at Auburn, you look at Arkansas. These are games that, yeah, were a lot closer than you would have loved them to be. But then you turn around and you win the important games in those important spots that everybody always expects you to lose. You've been winning those games. Now you have Missouri down a starting quarterback. It's on the road. We'll see how that one shakes. I like our chances in that game. South
Absolutely.
Carolina, yeah, I think they emptied the tank against Alabama this past week, and it still didn't get the job done. Now
Man,
you get,
they just let that thing slip away. That was
right.
unbelievable.
And
Had Bama on.
meanwhile, you have Samford, whatever. Texas, the situation is very interesting over there, right? You have a team that should have lost these last 2 weeks and found a way to win. Good teams find ways to win games. They just do. That's one of the things that is unfortunately a reality. Now, the question now becomes, did Texas play with fire for too damn long, and do they get burned in these last four games?
Well, you look at their last two games and they found a way to win. Great, but they found a way to win against Kentucky and they found a way to win against Mississippi State.
Right, on the road, I get it. No
The
win
cowbell
game.
thing I get. The cowbell thing I get. Like that's a if when you've never been in that environment, it is a shock to the system.
Yeah, but Kentucky though.
That one, man, that's a complete head scratcher.
Yeah, complete head scratcher. I mean, yeah, Kentucky played, Ole Miss tough at home. All right. And they've played some other teams tough at home. But that means it's still Kentucky. And you're Texas, and you have this billion-dollar roster built up over here. And you're having to go to overtime with these guys. And frankly, lucky you didn't have to. I mean, you had to suffer that again the next week with Mississippi State.
Lucky you didn't. You're lucky you don't have two back-to-back losses and completely unranked because you lost to two crappy teams. You're lucky that basically those teams gave those games away.
So now, you look ahead at Texas and you ask the question, do they end up having to stumble here on the back end of the stretch? And it's hard to say no based on who's on that schedule. I mean, you got Vanderbilt at home, sure.
That's going to be a tough, tough game, and I would not shock me to see Vandy go in there and win by 10 points. It
You got to
wouldn't.
go. Yeah, you got to go to Athens.
Yeah, for me, that's foregone conclusion as a loss. But I will say one thing though, with Arch going down with the concussion, Steve Sarkisian may have just got bailed out
He may have.
because although we've seen this much out of that backup quarterback, he certainly looked better than Arch. And so
Ironically, yes.
Sark might have gotten bailed out by not having to bench Arch with him having a concussion.
The problem is, though, Texas still has that O line.
Yeah.
It so at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good that quarterback is if he doesn't have proper protection. And as you've said many, many times, Texas's defense is not the defense that we thought they were. And you're going to be going up against Vanderbilt in what is essentially a pick 'em game this weekend. You're a 1.5 point favorite at home. Neutral site's going to say that Vanderbilt probably wins that game in a tight one, sure. But Vanderbilt's got momentum on their side too. You just got done with two big, big wins. You take down LSU. You take down ranked Missouri at home on game day. Big deal. A defensive slugfest, but you find a way to win that game, and you did it. Exactly where you needed to do it. You got Texas. Oh boy, that's a big game this week for Texas and Vanderbilt.
I think that's a big equalizer. One, Vandy proved that they can do a defensive like a slugfest. They can play in a defensive game. Pavia doesn't have to carry them to victory by putting up 45 points.
And he
So
didn't.
they proved they can do that. It's a little bit like A&M proving they can win in different ways. Pavia didn't have great numbers. I mean, it was a defensive slugfest. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's going to be the great equalizer, right? It's going to be Pavia versus that Texas defense because you Vandy defense, Texas offense. If we get the backup quarterback, I don't know what that offense looks like because I don't care if he's mobile, he's not going to be as fast as Arch Manning. Like Arch can scoot, man.
No, Arch
Give
can
props where
scoot.
it's due. He can scoot. He's good at like he's got good vision when he runs. But I don't, so no matter how mobile this guy is, I would be highly surprised if he could scoot like Arch, right? Because if he could scoot like Arch, he probably would have been in earlier, quite frankly. So there's got to be some sort of severe drop off that Steve Sarkisian's seeing, or he's just being held hostage by the Manning family. One or the other. I don't know. Steve, blink twice. If everything's
Yeah,
okay.
let us know.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting one. So it's what they've got Vandy at home, and then the next week is at Athens. I don't have their schedule in front of me.
Okay, so what they have coming up, they have one more road game. The rest of them are going to be at home. They take Vanderbilt at home. They're on the road at Georgia.
And they're done with their buys, right?
Maybe. No, they have one more bye week right before, conveniently before they play Georgia on the road. They do get a bye week. So
So next week is their bye week, and then they go on the road to Georgia, and then
Then they play Arkansas at home and they get A&M at home. So
Arkansas could be a sneaky game because I'm telling you that is an old rivalry, and Petrino will probably bring that up about the rivalry between Arkansas and Texas. So don't sleep on that game. If you're Texas, you can't sleep on that game because Talen Green will light you up.
Well, and that's the other side of the coin now, is the other thing to consider. You get Arkansas, who is potentially, depending on how your defense plays, is going to give you a run. You probably win that game. I mean, if I
Yeah.
was picking that game today, I think Texas wins it because Arkansas just is that bad. They haven't found a way to win games yet. But they could scare the living daylights out of you, put up a lot of points, running you a little ragged, and then you have a short week. You only have till Friday to turn around and then host A&M, who could potentially be coming into that game at 11-0, and
Yeah, the week.
likely at a position where they've secured not just a spot in the SEC title game, but potentially in the playoff.
Well, if you're 11-0 going into Austin, you're in the playoffs. Like that's, I mean, that's a, I mean, it's literally a given.
At this point, yes, it is, no question.
People talk about the run out that OU has for the rest of the season, because they're on the road at Bama, Missouri at home.
Tough.
Excuse me. Well, this weekend, crap, they're on the road at Tennessee, on the road at Alabama. That's back-to-back brutal. Then you go home to get Missouri, old Big Eight rivalry. And then you close out the season at home with LSU, who at that point will probably have players sitting out, like, because that's the kind of culture that Kelly has cultivated at LSU. But that is a brutal run up. But Texas is much easier. I mean, it's not. I mean, even though they've got Arkansas on the schedule, that could be a really physical game for them. And
It could be.
Arkansas would like nothing more than to beat them up the week before. Well, Arkansas would love to, nothing more to win than to win, but they'd certainly love to beat them up going into our game.
Oh,
Because
yeah.
Arkansas doesn't like us because we beat them all the time. Arkansas doesn't like Texas because Arkansas doesn't like Texas.
Well, yeah, and that goes back to that little three-way that was always going on in the old Southwest Conference. Those none of us liked each other back then.
Absolutely.
So I'm all about that. Regardless, yeah, this back third of the season for all of us now is going to be very intriguing to keep up with. It's just it, you know, it's cool being in the conversation. So,
Well,
but
you know,
and it.
and as bad as this week's slate of games is, the matchups moving forward are fantastic.
Oh, no question. I'm excited about it. There's a bunch of great games coming up in the SEC. Actually across all of college football. I mean, it's a fun time of the year. It always is. November is where a lot of teams are going to end up finding out who they are. Yeah, longest month of the season, really, because this is where a lot of those dominoes officially fall into place. Who's going to be in that conversation? Who's going to be those guys?
Are you going to fade or are you going to shine?
Right. So A&M, you're sitting at 8-0. You've got the best strength of record in the country. You have a first place vote in the AP poll. I don't know when the last time that happened was.
No, we have multiple this week. Last week we had one. This week we had, I think, two or three.
I think we had one this week.
I thought it was multiple this week.
Pretty sure it was one this week. But regardless, you're talking, you got votes in the AP poll. You got A&M largely, yeah, completely in the spotlight now because people are paying attention. They know now. When you go into Baton Rouge and do what you did, people are going to take notice no matter how good or bad that LSU team is.
I'd be curious what the ratings were like for that game.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I know it was, this is ABC. And shout out real quick to ABC for their broadcast of this football game, taking the time to show the crowd, to highlight what was going on in that stadium, and understanding the implications of just how big of a win this was for our program.
Yeah, the post-game celebration stuff, that was fantastic. That really.
Amazing.
It's just like a free commercial for us, pretty much. I
It
mean,
was.
it's what it was. But yeah, so looking like moving forward, we kind of talked about the games themselves. Let's talk about an individual. Let's talk about Marcel Reif or Heisman. So right now, depending on where you're looking, I've seen kind of all over the place, but let's say it is plus 600, because that seems to be pretty much hovering somewhere around that number. Are you right now, if I gave you $100, would you put it down? You have to put it down on somebody to win the Heisman. Would you take the long shot of Marcel Reed to win the Heisman? Because you got Mendoza at 325, Simpson's at 400, Sains at 400. So it's a long shot, but would you take it? And if so, what game is his Heisman moment?
It's hard for me right now to give it to Marcel. Just because, I mean, you've seen over the course of the game, a lot of what he does is team oriented. He is very good with his legs on the ground. He is not the most accomplished passer still. I mean, he's had some great games. He was a little over 50% in this last game.
Right, but put together 300 yards and what, four touchdowns? Accounted for four
It's
touchdowns?
excellent. It's excellent from you.
Through two, ran two.
Yeah. I might put money on him to be there, to be in New York. I could put money down on that. I have a hard time putting him over. I definitely think he's better than, I think he's got better shot than Diego Pavia. I think he's got, but, Fernando Mendoza, God, that guy has been crushing. And honestly, Ty Simpson at Alabama has been so good. Yeah, he had a rough game compared to what he's had in the past against South Carolina, but I think he corrects that. I don't know.
See, my thought is if we go on the road to Missouri and Marcel can put up some numbers, get closer to like 350 total offense, I'm not really worried about his completion percentage relative to the height. If he's creating four or five touchdowns a game, I'll
If
take that every day, all day.
he's gonna have a Heisman moment, it's gonna come in Austin, I think.
Yeah, but I think he can lay a lot of groundwork in Columbia because
He could.
It's a road game in the SEC. Missouri should still be ranked, I believe.
I
I
think
mean,
that, you know, at least at this mom at this minute they are.
I mean, it'd be tight. I don't know what, I don't know who Missouri has this week. Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah, I haven't looked at Missouri's schedule.
So
I need to.
Missouri's got,
Are they on a
no,
bye?
they're on a bye with us. Okay. So they don't have anybody this week.
So they'll remain ranked.
Yeah, they won't move. They're what, 19th now.
All right, so back-to-back ranked road games for A&M with a bye in the middle.
Yeah, and I think if you can go to Missouri and have the same kind of,
A similar game?
point differential, say, yeah, same kind of game, go create four touchdowns in one on one, running or passing, I don't care.
Limit your turnovers, but other than that,
Put up video game numbers against South Carolina because still an SEC opponent,
right?
right? Obviously, play a half against Sanford.
Yeah, I don't
That
anticipate
was
him.
one complaint I did have. We were up really big, and he was still in the game, and like, we need to protect him. Like,
I get that.
we have a backup quarterback, and we're up by a lot.
Right.
Play him.
Although I understand wanting to continue to play complete games, I especially in the SEC, I understand that it's, you know, and the environment at that point wasn't a factor. Yeah, you probably could have put backups in for key experience, no
At
question.
about 7 minutes left, we should have been like offensive backups.
That would have
Yeah. I want to protect those guys, Concepcion and Craver, all those. Like, I just let
Yeah.
the backups play. Let's protect these guys. So that's like my one nitpick, just about kind of management of the game from an LP standpoint. But yeah, I just, if you can go to Missouri and do the same thing, and then South Carolina be done playing by the end of the third quarter, play a half against Sanford, your Heisman moment comes in Austin.
I think so.
I think
That's what I
Missouri is
think.
where you Missouri and South Carolina, you build the groundwork, and you have to go to Austin and you need to smash them.
Yeah. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. It's like, can you go into Austin? Can you put up video game numbers in Austin? And, you know, I was talking about this with my buddy James, who has a question whenever we get our questions here in a bit that I think you'll appreciate. But we were talking about it. Like, do you think, like, an LSU team, based on what we saw, beats Texas in Baton Rouge that night? It's tough for me to say at this stage, but if you take this Texas team as we've seen them and the issues that we know that they have, I think if you can contain them in the special teams game, you know, don't allow for big returns, that's gonna be a
I
big
wouldn't
stop.
punt to him.
I wouldn't punt to them either. And if you're going to, sky those things nice and high, make them have to fair catch it. You know,
Yeah.
don't give them an opportunity to return the ball. If you can basically take that aspect out of that game against Texas, the prospect becomes way less daunting. Plus, on top of that, we're talking about a situation where there's going to be a lot of Aggies in Austin. Whether people like it or not, there's going to be a ton of Aggies at that game.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be a full on, you know, Kyle Field West situation, but there will be enough Aggies in there to make a difference, like we saw in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I'm looking
So,
back just at some schedules real quick, just relative to the Heisman. And so you've got, was it Mendoza at Indiana? So he's the leader in the clubhouse right now. As far, or not in the clubhouse, but he's the leader as far as Heisman odds right now. In Indiana, I got anybody left. Penn State on the road, Wisconsin at home, Purdue on the road. That's a nothing schedule. I mean, so he's probably going to put up video game numbers. So you'd be surprised. Now, if Indiana finds a way to drop one of those games, see, this is the other thing we always have to factor in with Heisman, right? It, they always err towards the teams with better records as well. Like
Also that,
if
yeah.
you're the quarterback with of an undefeated team, you're probably, in one of the Power Four conferences. Chances are you're going to New York, and if not, it's close.
Yeah, you're well within the conversation, no question.
Then you look at Ohio State, all they have left on the road to Purdue, home to UCLA, home to Rutgers, on the road to Michigan. That Michigan game is always tricky.
It is.
It
Rivalries are
really is.
tricky.
It has been lately. But again, so now you got, Julian Sands got nothing left. Alabama's running. Yeah, they've still got the Iron Bowl, but that's not going to really matter. Oh crap, who does Alabama have left? Hold on a second.
Yeah, you're fine. So yeah, Alabama's football schedule.
Let's see. So they've got LSU coming up, So they're on a Alabama's on a bye this week, and then they're home to LSU, home to Oklahoma, home to Eastern Illinois, and on the road for the Iron Bowl. So I think it'll be tough for Marcel to get to New York, just because those guys are already, kind of odds bet ahead of him, but they're close. If you can go rack up some video game numbers, I don't think it's out of the question because it's a ranked Missouri team. It's another SEC team in South Carolina. And then, he'll rack up stats probably against Samford. Probably not as many as we think because he'll get pulled early or something like that. But Texas is where you got to do it. If you want to go to New York, man, you go to Austin and you put on a freaking show.
And then, we'll see what shakes after that. But just a lot to be excited about right now. You obviously were very happy with the direction things are moving. The question just becomes, can you close? Can you close this season out, do it the right way, and put yourself in a position?
And so, and that would be destroying, one more of those Texas A&M narratives, how we fade, at the end of the season.
Yep.
Take this bye week to just to get right, man.
Yep.
It's
Reset
been a
your
long
brain.
season. You're two-thirds of the way in. Everybody's got some dings and bruises, and so you get that extra week. You go to Columbia, you get the 2:30 kick, which is fantastic. I think South Carolina would probably be 11 a.m. or a 2:30. I mean, we're doing well. So depending on what network that's, if it's on the SEC network, I could see us getting the 6:30 kick just to give it to us because you kind of earn.
So looking at A&M's football, like online, it's saying, yeah, 2:30 for Missouri. It says early for South Carolina. So it'll either be
11 a.m. or
11,
two
11:30, depending on
Yes.
what SEC network thing maybe, but it'll be an early game.
Yeah, and Sanford, who knows? It could be at 11 a.m. or it could be that like weird
That one's
5:30
11.
kick.
That
Like,
one's 11 a.m.
oh, he's already announced it's
Yeah.
11. It's or it's that, or it's like that weird 5:30 slot that they have on the plus.
Plus, you'll get the night game because it'll be a night game in Austin.
Oh
That's
gosh, yes.
the way it's set right now. So, Friday night for that game. So, plenty to look forward to on that.
It's just fun, man. Just enjoy it. I mean, we have a good football team. That
Enjoy
is
them.
a factual statement. We have a good football team. Now it's time to kick down one more door and not fade in the back end of the schedule.
That's all we can ask for. Let's jump into our picks from this past week.
Okay, I went 3-2. You went 4-1. We were pretty similar. So Vandy beat Mizzou. We both called that. BYU won on the road and beat Iowa State. I can't figure out what to make of BYU. They were ranked 11th. Then they went on the road to Iowa State, but they were 2.5 point dogs. Like
I
I
don't
don't think
think
anybody
people.
knows what.
Well, because nobody's watching them. I think that's part of the problem. Like, nobody's paying any attention to BYU, so they really have nothing for
That's fair. UCLA at Indiana. We picked the spread on this, and man, were we wrong. Okay, Indiana.
them.
They just dog walked UCLA.
Yeah. Indiana's that dude, man. They
A
are
little bit, yeah.
incredible. I mean,
Number 23, Illinois went on the road to Washington. I got this one wrong. I picked Illinois, and I think I even said it. Like, I had absolutely no reason why I was doing it. So I was wrong. So I should probably think more about my picks.
yeah.
And have reasons to pick. And then, we both picked the Aggies. So that puts you at 29-18. I'm 27-20. There is a crap slate of games this week, so it was hard to kind of pick the games, but there are a couple of good games. And I always try and pick close lines. First out of the bat, it's probably the best game on the slate this week is number 18 OU going to Knoxville, number 14 Tennessee. Tennessee is a 3.5 point favorite.
What's Tennessee's biggest strength?
Being at home.
Offense. Offense is kind of their one big deal. Plus, it is at home, no question. That's what they lean in on. Mateer, he's been dinged up. Granted, had surgery on his throwing hand earlier in the season. That has limited his productivity as a
Rushed
season.
him back. I think they rushed him back.
Rushed him back is the absolute right word there. Yeah, I mean, there's not much here for me to really look at Oklahoma and say, I like the cut of their jib. I think they're going to pull this one off. I think the fact it's in Knoxville. This is Tennessee. I mean, it's going to be a night game at Neyland. And Oklahoma has not done well
It's
in some environments.
it. It's gonna be rocking and nailing. That should be a fun game to watch. I've got Tennessee winning this game, and I've got them winning actually pretty decently, quite frankly. I think it's a
Yeah.
10
No.
point.
I'm all about that. Yeah, give me the balls, Rocky
Yeah.
Top.
Number 23, USC travels to Nebraska. They're 6.5 point favorites. See, there's just nothing. So I think this is one of those things where, is USC got their feelings hurt kind of thing. Are they going to be able to handle, bouncing back basically?
Well, and you have to question the mental fortitude of Nebraska at this point, because you have Matt Rhule's name being thrown around all these coaching searches. In the moment that started, they went on the road and got absolutely blasted by Minnesota, and that did not look very pretty at any facet of that game. Yeah, I think it's USC, man. Trojans. Yeah, you're going off to the east to go play this game. I don't
Yeah, but
think
they
they have
got it's
much
a night game.
night
So
game.
my only pause would be, night game in Nebraska. Maybe the crowd will still get up for it. I mean, they're still 6-2.
They
I mean,
are.
it's not like they've got a terrible record. So I mean, there's still hope, in Nebraska. All right, the next one.
So who'd you pick?
Oh, I got USC.
Okay, I was wondering. Good.
Oh, yeah. All right, the next one I picked because it is terrible. So we've got 2-5 North Carolina going on the road to 3-5 Syracuse.
We need more butt bowls in our picks at times, man. Like, I'm about it.
I got you then. Syracuse is a 2.5 point favorite at home, so this is a pick 'em game. They both suck. Somebody's got to win.
And I have such a hard time doing anything for Bill Belichick right now. I mean, they got awfully close in that Virginia game this past week. I mean, a rivalry game, overtime. They were competitive, sure, but I think that once again, kind of a situation where they dumped the tank. Now you're going on the road to a goofy environment. I mean, let's just call it what it is. The JMA Wireless Dome up there in Syracuse. That's a goofy place to go try to play football.
Carrier Dome, things what you
Carrier
said.
Dome, man. It's a tough place to play. I mean, I won't say it's a tough place to play, but it's just goofy.
Weird things happen in the Carrier Dome.
They do.
Like Syracuse, for some reason, like every couple of years, is good for one really big upset for absolutely no reason. And it always occurs in the Carrier Dome. And they never can do it on the road.
Give me
I mean,
Big
I know this
Orange.
would be an upset. I mean, it's a pick'em game.
Yeah, give me Big Orange in this one. Nothing about USC is, I mean, yeah, UNC's doing anything for me.
Yeah, I'm picking Syracuse just because I want to see the continued talk about how crappy Bill Belichick is.
I need it.
Yeah. All right. I just thought this next one was kind of an interesting game just because the line kind of was surprising. And it may not be surprising to you, but this is Mississippi State going on the road to Arkansas. Mississippi State's 4-4. Arkansas's 2-6. Arkansas at 2-6 is a 4.5 point favorite.
And you have to ask yourself a question on Mississippi State's line. Like, where is their brain at? You have been so
Dude,
close. You've been
yeah.
so close.
I mean, how much more do they have emotionally in the tank to keep playing
I
for
mean,
a coach that I think needs to get canned, quite frankly. I don't have anything against Jeff Lebby, but Mississippi State needs to sit down and have a real honest conversation about what their expectations are from their football program. Because not 10 years ago, they had Dak Prescott and were setting the world on fire. And I know they all enjoyed it, right? They felt like it was elevating Mississippi State's program. And then you had Fitzgerald, so they're still winning games. So and I know like Lebby made sense to hire, I guess. I was talking about this yesterday with a friend of mine. If you hire Lebby without a coaching search, and you don't interview anybody, then you don't know how well he interviews for this job. You don't have anybody to compare him to. So I just don't think Lebby was ready. I think maybe Mississippi State thought, well, he was underneath Mike Leach. He'll be able to just keep doing what Mike Leach was doing. And I just don't think Lebby's the dude. And so I think, and if I'm thinking that about a program I don't care much about and a guy that I have no problem with whatsoever, that there's talk like that with Mississippi State donors. And so if that's trickled down, the football program knows anything about it, it's a messy situation at Mississippi State right now. But 2-6 Arkansas isn't much better.
Well, and now you have to ask yourself the other important question, which is, do you want to throw your hat into the ring with all of these other schools that are already going to do it in your state? Which, unfortunately, just within SEC focus, that's going to put you below Florida. That's probably going to put you below Auburn. That's definitely going to put you below LSU. Everybody's below LSU on as far as the coaching tier at this point.
And quite frankly, depending on what happens in Fayetteville, you're going to be below Arkansas because Arkansas cares about football a
They do.
lot.
Yeah, they do. And a lot of talk about Arkansas potentially just keeping Bo Pelini. In
Petrino.
Petrino, Bobby Petrino. If they're looking
But
at
what I'm saying is, if they don't, they open up a search. Now that's another school that you're not going to be above.
right, and
I
that's
mean,
a tough sled.
that's a really good point. Like, do you hold on to them literally because you're going to be hosed if you try and get out in the coaching search world? You're going to end up with a nobody.
Well, because every other big name is going to get snatched up. People are already talking about the fact that LSU is likely looking beyond the scope of the current coaches in college football, looking at the likes of, I feel like this name gets thrown around every single time, but Urban Meyer. But then they'll throw around the name, the big one, Nick Saban. Go back and try to get Nick Saban back to LSU.
Nick ain't going back to coaching.
I don't think he will either.
I don't think Urban Meyer will either.
I don't
They
think he will
got
either.
cursed jobs, man. Why would they?
Yeah, I don't, and I, that's my point. I don't blame either one of them for staying away, but LSU's at least going to make the call because
Oh yeah.
why wouldn't they?
Well, and I'll tell you one that LSU fans would be too prideful to pull, but I think is a really interesting name is the coach over Tulane.
Oh yeah, no question. I honestly think that's a really okay. Talk about a guy who one understands the state of Louisiana better than virtually any other candidate out there, and I think that's a big one to consider, right? Ed Orgeron, Coach O, right? Everybody loved to poke at Coach O, but what did Coach O do? He had what is largely considered to be one of the greatest college football teams ever,
God, isn't
statistically,
that?
right?
God, isn't that?
The 2019 LSU Tigers were a sight to behold as a football team. They smashed us in that building that year. While Joe
We
Burrow
smashed
had,
everybody in every building
oh
that year.
yeah, but this is coming off the heels of the 7 overtime game. Joe Burrow goes out there with Burrow, with the goofy spelling on the back of the jersey. The moment I saw that, I was like, okay, we are cooked in this game. But that right there is exactly the type of guy and the type of coach you want at a program like LSU, somebody who understands Louisiana, somebody that understands the importance of defending that state and that state's honor, he's not a bad option. But you're still going to hear the likes of Lane Kiffin getting thrown in there. You're going to still see the likes of some of these other big high-profile guys get floated.
I
So
really, really don't want to see Lane Kiffin in LSU.
I don't either, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. Would he go there or would he go to Florida? I would see him go to LSU before Florida.
All right, we went way down a rabbit hole.
We
Mississippi State,
did, but
Arkansas,
let's pick
Arkansas.
the game real quick. So if we're
Yeah.
looking at this game, Arkansas, man, they have been very close in games. I'm looking at Mississippi State right now, just in their last four, right? You lose to Tennessee in overtime. You do get, you end up losing pretty healthy to A&M, but then you go 2-point loss to Florida, overtime loss to Texas. Now you're on the road. You're on the road at Arkansas, and that's a very good offense. It's kind of a whatever defense. This is an intriguing kind of butt bowl in its own little way. So I
Yeah,
it,
I mean, you got an Arkansas team that, to start the year flew out of the gate against nobodies. They're close on the road at Ole Miss. They lose a squeaker to Memphis. Notre Dame blows their doors off, but tight with Tennessee, tight with us, tight with Arkansas. How much bandwidth are they still? I mean, they're still fighting. Even different coach, same fight. I'm going to take Arkansas in this game. And I know they're 2-6, but Taylen Green's a dude, man. He's just absolutely a dude. And Mississippi State has shown that they can throw games away with the best of them. So I'm taking Arkansas on this one at home. If I had to bet on the line, I don't know that I would. This might be a tight game, but I'll take Arkansas to beat Mississippi State.
My problem with this game is simply the fact that Mississippi State cannot close the deal.
Yeah.
They don't know how to do it. They can't finish a game with a win. They just can't do it in the SEC. They haven't done it all year. You take care of your business against Arizona State early, sure, but that was months ago at this point.
Yeah.
I hate when people refer to these old games at the beginning of the season. That is not representative of who this team is now.
Yeah, bro, a game before Labor Day, it's not the same team.
Not even close to the same team. Arkansas, yeah, I think they got unlucky, and there were some bad mistakes, especially in that fourth quarter against Auburn. I mean, what, like three picks, like four turnovers?
Was bad.
It was not very good. I don't think they have those same mistakes against Mississippi State. Give me the Hogs.
Same. All right, and the last one, number nine, Vanderbilt goes on the road to the Sips. The Sips are 1.5 point favorites, so Vandy is, according to Vegas, the better team. This is real simple. If Arch doesn't go, I don't know that this one is close. Even though that backup quarterback has looked good, but he's had like eight passes, you know, so it's like we really don't know anything about this kid. Like you said, same offensive line, right? And Texas has been playing with fire, and at some point it's gonna get you. And Vandy's riding a high. I keep picking against Vandy, saying, you know what, the Cinderella season's gonna end. The Cinderella season's gonna end. You know what, Vandy's gonna go on the road and make a statement win, a ranked game on the road. I think Vandy goes in and gets it done. I don't think it's a blowout by any means. I think it's a tight game. It probably comes down to the fourth quarter, but I like Vandy to get it done because Texas has won the last two games. Well, by record, Texas has won the last two games. The last two games, Kentucky has given the game away and Mississippi State has given the game away. Texas has not gone in and won those last two games. So I think Vandy gets them. I think Vandy maybe gets them by a touchdown.
Texas has been playing with fire for way too long. They're about to get burned. I think Vanderbilt has enough of the skill players, got the right coach, got the right mindset. They know what's at stake. Yeah, it's an 11 o'clock kick in Austin. Everything's kind of stacking up against you on that front and all that fun jazz. But I think at the end of the day, I really, really like what Vanderbilt's been doing, being able to compete in various different styles of games, winning shootouts, winning defensive slugfests. And I don't think they are scared of Texas in any way, shape, or form. I like Vanderbilt.
You know what? I got to be honest. I love it being 11 a.m. game. That wine and cheese crowd at Texas does not do well with 11 a.m. games. I mean, they might prove me wrong because it's a ranked opponent. But I don't know, man. That Vanderbilt can maybe pop on them early, and just kind of send a little shockwave to their system. I'm watching the game. That's for damn sure.
No question about it.
Hate watching that game.
Yeah, that is at the top of my hate watch list. Excited about it. Oh, okay. We have a few questions that we're gonna
All
try
right.
to slam through here.
Yeah, for a bye week, we're running kind of long.
Well, we had plenty to talk about with that LSU game, so that doesn't
That's true.
hurt.
Well, and Kelly getting fired and
Also that, yeah. So anyway, we're gonna get this thing rolling. All right, from my buddy Andrew Waters. He's a photographer up in Lubbock. So you can gauge his loyalties there. He said, "Robert, will the universe allow for the Aggies to win more than eight games this season? What will the consequences of that being on society?" Well, I'll tell you this much, buddy. The consequences on society are you're going to see a lot of very obnoxious people online beating their chest, and rightfully so, because we have been told time and time again, you never are going to sniff a national title. You guys don't belong in these positions. You are Texas 8-4 until the end of time.
yeah,
We're
that's
going to
and yeah,
respond
because
accordingly.
that's yeah, that's been the narrative, right? Mediocrity and perpetuity, right? I'll tell you right now, we get to 11 or 12 wins. Look, if we win the national championship, you have no idea the storm coming on social media. We will be absolutely the most obnoxious human beings on the planet. But I think the reality is, so we're already at 9 wins, right? Because you chalk Samford up, and you have to. This isn't the team that goes and loses to an App State. They're not going to lose to Samford. You got South Carolina, so now you're at 10, right? I think Missouri is absolutely gettable. You're at 11. Texas, crazy game, night game, rivalry, toss up. Maybe you go 11-1. 11-1, depending on a couple of other things shake out, that puts you in Atlanta.
Well, and once you make it to Atlanta, then yeah, you can start making some, assumptions about how good this team really is, because you finally can answer that major question that people are going to have about A&M. Because whether we're playing Alabama, Georgia, potentially Ole Miss, depending on how all these schedules shake out, if A&M goes into Atlanta and does the thing, wins the game, You can throw all of that out the window because the one running gag on A&M this season has been they haven't played anybody. I mean, strength of record says otherwise, but you haven't played anybody. Well, you have a chance to go out there and do it. And that's, of course, crossing that bridge when we get to it. But there's going to be some narratives that are going to get kicked around and obnoxious Aggies everywhere you go.
Yep, absolutely. But yeah, just prepare yourself.
Yeah, prepare yourself if A&M continues to win. That's all I'm going to say. Garrett Smith asks, question, if you don't like, I mean, question, if I don't like our fans doing the jersey chant, does that make me an old man yelling at a cloud? Yes, it does.
Yes,
Get off
absolutely.
of your high horse, Garrett. I love you.
I get being a little upset about it just because it's the whole being profane with, but
We walk into a stadium every other year where they say, suck that tiger dick, bitch. I don't care. I don't care anymore. I have officially eclipsed a point at this stage of my fandom that it's pretty much, yeah, if you ain't in my jersey, I completely agree with that thought process on the field. And that's the way we should play. And that's our thought process.
I mean, I'm okay with being angry about it. But if you're angry about booing, then yes, you are an old man. I highly advise booing.
Yeah, it's far more effective. I mean, we've seen it happen time again. Feel free to like hiss the little thing, like obviously most of the time whenever it comes to our hissing, who's it normally directed at? The team coming out onto the field to play us, right? If it's an official,
Boo.
let them hear it because otherwise
Boo,
they're just gonna be
SEC
like,
officiating. Boo, boo.
yeah, you gotta let them know, right? All right.
Boo, get the record.
Okay.
Boo,
David Madron on X had a question. He said, does Moffitt get an extension done soon? God, I hope so.
Oh man, they should have done it yesterday. They should have had an extension ready for him to sign in the locker room after the LSU game. And we
Yeah.
win that game, and we're like, you know what? Since you're so happy, how about we extend you? That dude. Yes, lock him down. Do whatever you got to do. Make him the highest paid strength and conditioning coordinator in the land. I don't care. I mean, he might be. I don't know.
Buy him a mansion out in Milliken. I don't care. Do something.
I will be his realtor.
Yeah, we'll take care of it. We love him. Keep him here.
Yeah, gotta keep him.
All right, we're gonna wrap up questions with two food-related questions.
Oh.
I'm very happy we got these. All right, so from Jive Coach G, he asks, what is your favorite fall soup? Etouffee, gumbo, tomato, potato, chili? Recipe included would also be appreciated from Roy.
So I made gumbo on Saturday. It's the first time I've ever tried to make like authentic from scratch gumbo. And it was chicken sausage and shrimp gumbo. So it was all three, right? Holy crap, man. Unbelievable. Like so good. And this was a recipe that I found, right? This wasn't like
Right.
I just made it up. So, but found this recipe online. Unbelievable gumbo. But my favorite thing in the fall is probably my chili. I've got a chili recipe that I love. So yeah, hit me up, send me a DM and I'll send you the recipe for my chili. It's not like a secret or anything.
Okay.
It's a lot of work though. I will say it's a lot of work.
All right, I'm gonna ask a question point two on this one. Do we do beans in our chili?
I do not. I don't do beans and chili, but I don't care if you do. That's kind of how I am. And if I were having a bunch of people over to make chili and like sit down for dinner, I would probably have a pot of beans on the side if they wanted to add beans to their chili.
And that's the way you do it, right? Like, if you want to add beans to your chili, you're welcome to, but I will serve the chili
As
as
yeah.
chili.
Well,
Not
and I
chili
will say
beans, chili.
it's probably actually not even chili is my favorite. It's chili Frito pie. So, layer of Fritos, layer of white rice,
Chili.
chili, cheese.
Cheese.
Yeah,
Because you can never go wrong with cheese. Never
little
go wrong with cheese.
shredded sharp cheddar.
Okay. And the final question. This is from my buddy James Davis. He asks, question for the pod. It's been a while since we've had a food question. So, what is your Mount Rushmore of food? Either cuisine or individual dishes? So, if you did four cuisines or four dishes, which route do we want to go?
We can do both. We can do both right quick.
Then we can do both.
So Italian and barbecue are absolutely no-brainers. Authentic Mexican food, not Tex-Mex. I like authentic over. I love Tex-Mex. I like to eat the crap out of it. And German.
Ooh.
I love German food.
Fair
Huge,
enough.
huge German food.
Prefer Puffast. Pizza. All right, cool.
Want to do cuisines?
So from yeah,
Actual dishes?
so I'll do my cuisines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
Yeah,
do
so I'll
your.
do my cuisines. So I'm right there with you. I am Italian number one, no question. God, Italian food is amazing. I love it.
Yes.
You know what's honestly way up my list is like hibachi.
Oh.
Japanese.
I'm right there with you. I love it.
Oh, I said that one's way up the list for me too. I do appreciate I'll throw barbecue in there. I'll definitely throw barbecue in there.
Well, I think it's
Especially
just because the expanse of, I'm not just saying brisket, it's all of it.
Yeah, no, all of what barbecue is in the United States, love it. Yeah, and man, for my last one, I mean, I'm kind of an Americana guy, man. I love a good cheeseburger. Man.
That's fair.
I'm a big fan of a good I if I could go around and just like rate cheeseburgers, that's what I would do. Because I love a good cheeseburger.
Nice.
Call me basic, but I dig it. That a good old fashioned steak. Ooh. Whatever you want to do with it. I'm all about that. Now your individual dishes.
See, this is going to be hard.
I feel that.
And I'm going to be probably a little egotistical about this.
Go ahead.
My chili. Let me think. My pasta with my homemade pasta sauce, my red sauce, when I add in some hot Italian sausage with it, some fresh grated Parmigiano Reggiano. Man, this is tough. My mom, so this is, it's not a dish, it's a meal. So she makes homemade potato salad and she does barbecue. And she like alters her, she makes kind of a different kind of barbecue beans and barbecue sausage. But like that meal is like, that's the kind of meal that brings back memories kind of thing.
Right, that Ratatouille scene where he takes the bite and then.
Straight up. Yeah, straight up, dude. And then, and I've done this as well. So it's like one of my favorite dishes, but I've done it and well. It's beef Wellington.
Oh, good one.
Yeah, it's expensive to make, but
Worth it.
I've done a lot of really intense cooking over the last year and a half or so.
Have fun with it.
It's been fun.
My mother's, I'll tell you what, my mom's Alfredo sauce with pasta. Oh, incredible. And I'll show you the backstory on that at some point later. But basically, they acquired this recipe for this Alfredo sauce, and it's amazing. That combined with a steak and some green beans is one of my favorite dishes that we do at my parents' house because my dad's steak plus that pasta is just, well, to die for. Absolutely to die for. I mean, a really, really good thin crust pizza goes hard for me because I love it when it's crispy. I can take a bite of it. I got plenty of the good flavor. The thing holds together. It doesn't completely fall apart.
Yeah, it was tough for me not to put pizza on there.
I'm gonna
I'm
do it.
a certified pizza slut.
I said I will do it, and I know that. It's a Italian kind of in. Encapsulates pizza so that I'm gonna allow that. I know it's technically a separation. There's a lot of little nuances to that, but I will stand upon that. And then for the fourth one, that's tough for me.
Surprised you're not going with a cheeseburger.
What about say if, and if I had to pick one, man, oh man, I do love a good Dixie chicken cheeseburger. I mean, just the a good Dixie chicken cheeseburger hits at the right time for me. It just does.
Went to chicken all the other day. It was fantastic.
I went to Chicken Oil for lunch. It was delicious. I because we're getting ready to hit a big Midwest run. I'll talk about it in a minute. But whenever we got to rolling on that, I mean, I went to lunch today because I needed to sneak in a chicken burger before I left, and I did, and it was
I actually went to copy today.
so good. Coffee Bridge is a great burger too. I'm not gonna turn my nose up to it. At all.
Right, let's get into this Midwestern thing. Is that it
Yeah,
for questions?
so Midwest, we are
Is that it for
hitting.
questions?
That's it for questions. We're
Okay.
done.
Yeah. All right, wait a minute.
So we are hitting the road this week. I will be coming at you guys live for our podcast probably next Tuesday. If we swing it from the Lake of the Ozarks, we're going to be hitting Milwaukee, Minneapolis, and Chicago this weekend with Randall King rolling around, not even in a van because the van is out of commission. We are rolling in two vehicles
Oof.
through the Midwest, going all the way up that direction. We're going to come back down into Missouri, chill out for a few days, do a little fishing, goof off at the lake down there, just chill out. Then we're heading to Wichita, heading to Des Moines. We will be in the Columbia, Missouri for this day A&M is playing in Missouri, which is hilarious that the schedule worked out that way. And on top of that, with it being a 2:30 game, perfect. We can sit here, sound check out the game while it's going on, wait for the game to get over, and then we get the post-game crowd. Hopefully they're all kind of sad. That would make my day all the better. But I will wear maroon on stage. I'm not gonna sit here and instigate the fine folks because I want them to be fans of us, but I will
That's
wear
fair.
some A&M gear. I mean, I'll bring my Dixie Chicken hat. I'll just rock that one on stage and we'll call that.
Yeah, you should put a post on TexAgs on the football forum. Be like, hey, if you're going to Missouri.
Right. Hey, y'all come check out my band.
Yeah.
Please. Actually, that's really not a bad idea. Maybe I'll do that here in a little bit. God, I
I'm
have enough.
the dude that came up with baseball Ole Sarge.
Yo, we've already been down that rabbit hole. I'm not going to go back to TexAgs and talk about that again. Waste of time and effort because you're just out here crying like a baby. I'm like, well, get over it. Anyway, it's a long time ago. Not worried about it anymore. Life's good and great. And guess what? He's still here. Ain't going nowhere. Be sure to follow us on our socials. That's going to be Rob the Slapper on both Instagram and X. And of course, Roy May 15. On X, as well as Roy May Jr. on Instagram. Be sure to follow the Red Ass Podcast. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe if you're on YouTube. Hit that little bell icon. Let us know that, so we can notify you when we upload. We're going on Tuesday this week. We'll go on Tuesday next week. Hell, we may just keep it on Tuesday. We'll see how our little stretch rolls. We've been recording on Thursdays just because our schedule worked out that way. But if we can make Tuesdays work, I'm all about it. So, we will be kind of gearing up for that as we get into this back stretch of the
Oh,
season, you know?
looks like he froze right at the end, too.
Well, that's good. At
Oh,
least
no.
it froze for you. Now it froze with you on my end. So I guess that is the podcast gods telling us that we went too long. We thank y'all so much for catching up with us. I am Rob White. This is Roy May. We're the Red Ass Podcast. Take care and beat the ever living hell out of the bye week. We'll see y'all next week. Goodbye.